You never do it right.
Just recorded for 2 seconds.
Well, good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Yes. He's done great in some new job.
Hope you're all doing well. So nice not to have the air condition, not to have to have air condition.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, it is. Although it's not that long from now, we'll have to have heating. So we're just in the transition place. So, how's everyone doing with their meditation? Anyone like to discuss any aspect of meditation?
Well, mine's been pretty minimal.
Pretty minimal.
So that's why I sort of hesitated to speak up. But the times I have been doing it, I'm trying to do at least a few minutes a day, but I still am having problems. Just when I think about breathing, it's just, I feel like I just get stuck. Like now I have a problem. I like, can't seem to get a good breath.
Because when you think about breathing, you stop breathing naturally.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. And have you tried to kind of sneak up on watching your breath? It's going on all the time.
Okay.
Can you?
I'm not sure which
one. Well, it's going on all the time.
Yeah.
And so the rest of the time, your attention is on all kinds of other things, going from one thing to another.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was just wondering if you could allow yourself to become aware of your breath without really paying attention to it first and just kind of sneak up on it.
Like when meditating or
when you're meditating, actually at any time, but especially when you're meditating.
Oh.
Maybe if you did it at other times too, it would help. You know what it is, it's a reaction, not that unusual. I mean, most people when they first begin to watch their breath have the experience that, well, I'm not sure I'm really breathing naturally now that I'm watching it. And that's true. The fact that you're watching your breath does change your breath. But I mean, who is the you or the I that we're talking about? Am I changing my breath when I'm watching my breath? And actually, the truth, and it's a really important truth, is that the part of you that's watching your breath isn't the part that's changing your breath. And if the part of you that's watching your breath can just let go of worrying about that, say, okay, it's some other part of me that just because I'm watching is now, you know, it's like watching another person, and when they know you're watching, they don't behave the same way that they would, right? But as long as you keep breathing, that doesn't matter, as long as you aren't intentionally changing your breath, and as long as you resist the temptation to be intentionally. And by that I mean that the same you that's doing the watching isn't trying to change the way the breathing's happening. You can dissociate those two, then you can go ahead and let the breath be changed and not worry about it. You hear what I'm saying?
Yeah, somewhat. Except having problems with the two U's. I am. I sort of met there. It's like, oh yeah, that's right. I mean, how are there two U's?
No, really, there's about several hundred at least.
Okay.
And that is one of the things that meditation teaches us fairly quickly. And this, what we're talking about right here, is a really good example of how it begins. I was aware of that there's not just me in here, there's not just my mind. There are quite a few different minds in here, each of which would like to play claim to the title me and be in charge. Mm-hmm. But in any given moment, it's only one of them, but it's not the same one.
Okay.
Next. Mm-hmm. So to use another kind of terminology, you know, meditation is about insight. And this is an insight experience. It's a potential insight experience. If you can have that realization that the me that's watching isn't the same me that's changing my breath.
Mm-hmm.
That is an inside experience,
mm-hmm.
and it can lead to a deeper understanding. So as long as you're still breathing, I wouldn't be discouraged, and I would just remember the whole purpose is just to bring the constant movement of your attention to any purpose. By keeping your attention on one thing, sensation to the breath. And so it doesn't really matter what your breath is doing. If you're paying attention to the breath, and by paying attention to the breath, keeping your attention from wandering all over the place, then it's a perfectly good meditation. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's the only point is to anchor your attention to the sensations of breathing. And you could do that even if you're on an artificial respirator. Or some people, when they meditate, they artificially control their breath. They count as they inhale 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then they stop and they count 1, 2, and then as they exhale, they count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and then they count 1, 2, and then they, you know. And those are very intentional manipulations of the breath. But they still don't keep you from keeping your attention focused on your breath, which is really, that's the key thing in the process. Now, it's much, much better if you can just breathe naturally and not get involved in all that kind of, because you're really not paying attention to your breath when you start to think about how you're breathing, whether you should breathe differently, all this other kind of stuff. Now your attention's gone away from the breath towards the thought. That's why it's better to just observe the breath as it occurs naturally. But it's better, but it's not absolutely essential. Okay? See if that helps when you're meditating tonight. You said you're not meditating very often. Is it because of this difficulty or are there other things?
No, it's just scrambling around with life.
Yeah. And that's not unusual either. Most of the time, what happens, we decide that we're going to meditate. Sounds like a great idea. And for the first few days or a little while, it's this great new thing we're trying. And so it has a pretty high priority, and it happens. We do it. But after that newness wears off, it's not going to have the priority that's attached to doing something that is new and different. Its priority has to come from a different place. We have to, and the only way basically you have to make time to meditate. I doubt if there's anybody in this room who has spare time in which to meditate or anything else. I mean, it's just, spare time is a mythical creature. And so to succeed in meditating regularly for a reasonable period of time, you're going to have the motivation, the belief that it is worthwhile and important, and then you're going to have to establish the priority of the meditation as compared to the other demands on your time, of which I'm sure there are many. What you might find helpful is always meditating at the same time. It's often a good way to do it.
Yeah. My schedule is not regular, so it's like there's no one regular
time. And there's quite a few of us nowadays who our schedule isn't regular.
Yeah.
A way to get around that is even if your schedule isn't regular, there are a few things that happen pretty consistently in the same, you know, if you laid out all the events of the day, they usually happen at about the same point. It may not be the same point in time, Even somebody that, say, does shift work and they work midnight shift for 3 weeks and then they go to day shift and then they go to evening shift. The thing that happens every day is there is a time that they wake up. There are times that they eat and so forth. So no matter how irregular your schedule is by the clock, there are certain events that happen more or less at the same time. And you can link your meditation to one of those events, and that will help you to regularize it. And a favorite one is the one thing everybody does at least once every day is wake up. And if you can make a regular habit of meditating, say, 15 minutes after you wake up. That's popular. Just some ideas. But one thing is you need to have a sense that this is something that you really want to give a good try to. You have to be motivated. And you have to do things to keep your motivation up. I'm glad you're here tonight. Because hopefully being here tonight, being around all these meditators, and talking about all of it, is going to strengthen your motivation. Yes, I do. Yeah. So do as many things like that as you can to strengthen your motivation. Another thing is meditating with somebody else. Because that way you help keep each other on track. So I hope some of these suggestions are helpful.
Okay.
So, good evening to all of you that came in since we started talking. We're now ready for your questions. Yes.
When you talk about, you think this is a jhana practice, is filling the body with the whole, or filling the whole body with the breath?
Yes.
Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Kind of that process of what you should be doing.
Well.
Or is that kind of a long one?
Can you repeat your question?
Yeah. So you're asking you're asking about the practice of experiencing the whole body with the breath, and you mentioned jhana practice. So what I wasn't clear, are you asking for me to talk about the transition from the regular practice to specifically doing the whole body jhana, or
don't know. I thought that was the jhana, but I couldn't.
Right. Oh well, it. It becomes. Let me just explain. We're experiencing the whole body with the breath. It becomes a journey practice. So you've worked up by examining different parts of your body, and to the point that you can recognize breath sensations in each of these different parts of the body, and then you've begun to add those different parts together so that when you got to the place where you could feel the breath sensation in your upper arm and in your hand and your forearm and your shoulder, then you start doing the hand and forearm together and then the hand and the forearm and the upper arm together until eventually you get to the point where you can focus exclusively on breath-related sensations and just kind of let all of the other sensations in your body, warmth and coolness and pressure, just be in the background while your attention is really focused on those sensations that change with the breath. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is you're able to do this in the entire body at one time. What you're doing in that process is you're pushing your mind. You're asking a lot of it. But when you succeed at that, you have really good attentional stability, and generally there's hardly any kind of thought process is taking on in your mind, taking place in your mind at all. Basically, because with all the sensory information and needing to discriminate between breath-related sensations and non-breath-related sensations, so that you're focusing only on the breath-related ones, that is so totally preoccupying that there's really no room for thoughts or any other kinds of distractions. So you've used it as a way to bring yourself to a state of single-pointedness. And as you get good at bringing yourself to that place and staying there for a while, you can use that single-pointedness to enter into a jhana. Now, what a jhana is, it's a special mental state, a little different than what we normally experience, but we experience it as a light jhana when we're doing favorite activities. We get totally into the flow of something. It becomes completely automatic. We're not really aware of anything else. And that's what it's called, flow experience. So you get in the flow, you get in this groove, you're doing it perfectly. It's really, you're repeating the activity. Every repetition is just bang on. Of course, every now and then you'll slip, but if you're really in a flow state, even when you slip off, you immediately go back into it. And so this is something that we experience with hobbies, with sports, a lot of other activities in our lives. So in meditation, a jhana is exactly this kind of flow state. But the jhana we're talking about in this case is the jhana that is a whole body jhana. So we have this awareness of the whole body. And before it becomes jhana, there is a sense of constant struggle, and it's a bit unsteady. We're aware of the unsteadiness of it. We're correcting, we're getting where we want to be, and then, we slack off, But when you get into that flow state, and you'll slip into it, and sometimes it'll only last 3 or 4 breaths, but you recognize when you do it, it's like, yes, 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 and there's nothing else but yes, yes, this is happening. And that's the jhana state, and so you want to learn to prolong it. When you can slip into that state and sustain it, it's very kind of blissful, it's happy, it's exciting at the same time. It's all of these things at once, but it's very enjoyable. It's very satisfying. And when you slip out of it, you want to get back into it. So that's what the jhana is. So you need to get good at experiencing the whole body with the breath first. But then once you're reasonably good at it, in the sense that, you don't want to waste your time trying to find the flow state when you can only get it all together once or twice in the course of a meditation session, and it only lasts a few minutes. Until that happens, you just want to work on getting really good at that, getting into that whole body awareness, and then trying to sustain it for longer and longer periods of time. When you feel like you're pretty good at doing it, then you can see if you can find that flow state, slip into it, and ride that way. It really is. It's this beautiful feeling of just cruising right there with it, one breath after the next. And you really just, you love it. You want it to keep on going. But one of the reasons that even when you slip out of the jhana state a little bit, you come back so easily, it's so wonderful. Your mind, forget the willful you. The mind itself just wants to get back into that place. Mm-hmm. That help? Yeah.
Isn't that a little bit or similar to when you talk about the unifying of the mind? When I do body breathing, it's a unifying of my body, and the mind is right into it, so I cannot separate that anymore. And there is this flow, all the thoughts are gone, and I'm just breathing, and everything is integrated.
That's exactly what it is.
Okay.
The jhana state is a state where the mind is much more unified than it normally is. And that's what makes it so pleasant, and that's what makes it so easy. And we're trying to train our minds to become unified easily and to remain and to become more completely unified over time and stay that way. So this state that our mind is already capable of jhana, is a really good way of making that happen. The more we can get into the jhana place, stay there, the more our mind gets used to the idea that this unification thing is really good, you know. You start out and you're herding cats and they all want to go every different direction. But jhana is that moment when, you know, you got synchronized cat dancing. You wave within the fish and all the cats move in the instant.
On this, it seems like the only time I get any of that is when I hit the cushion. And the minute it's time to go on about my day, all I get is profoundly more aware that I am easily distracted.
Mm-hmm.
And in normal day, in normal, oh, I have to look this up, oh, I have to accomplish this, oh, I have to go on this errand, it's... Sometimes it can tax me to have somebody talking to me while I'm trying to think.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll notice that I wish they wouldn't, and then I have to say, oh well, there's a bit of an attachment, and so it goes all day. And I didn't realize until this conversation here tonight, I had this expectation that if I meditate really well, I won't have to be distracted anymore all the time. But that seems to be a part of being on the cushion, and it all I get is a heightened awareness that I don't get to generalize that.
That you can't.
I don't get to generalize and stay unified all day and stay like I am on the cushion. I don't get that.
Well, actually, you can. This does happen. If you're in a long retreat, you'll get to a place where your mind stays really unified and you can be totally focused on this, and then an instant later, totally focused on that, and then the next instant, back on this, and the next instant on this over here. But no matter where your mind is, it's unified and totally focused. Now, it's very hard to maintain that long-term in daily life, but the better you get at it, the more you're able to at least slip into that mode temporarily when you realize that you really, really need to. But, you know, I'll find myself in a situation where I'm just like you. It's like, I want to focus on this, and I got this and this. You know, I'm starting to feel agitated. And so now, as if that and this weren't enough, now I have a fourth thing, now I'm in agitation. Of course, I'm more successful at some times than others. I'm not going to claim to be perfect in a way I'm not, but I have enough skill that very often I can, at least for that situation, let go of the agitation and slip into, okay, I gotta take care of this and this and this, and I'll be totally autonomous without them. And that allows me to be in that kind of state. And then that is a flow experience when that happens for as long as it lasts.
So it doesn't.
I can listen to my father and I can do whatever this other thing is, and, you know, and I can handle it for a while.
So
it does come.
It doesn't bother you that you have to take that minute and say, oh, wait a minute.
Generally, it will bother me enough till I wake up to what's going on and realize what I need to do. It's, you're operating in one mode, and then the situation changes. And that's kind of That's what the real purpose of emotions like feeling bothered is about, is it brings our attention to something about the situation that's not working and motivates us to change it. So, yeah, you know, it's not that you'll never have that experience of feeling bothered, but the better you get at it, it won't take much of that. You'll feel that and then you'll know, okay, I know what I've got to do. And then everything will be okay.
Okay.
Good evening. Yeah, just a couple of minutes left if anybody else has a question or comment that you'd like to bring up. Yes.
I wonder if you had any, what your favorite commentary on the Abhidhamma was, and if you've got favorite readings from the Pali Canon.
Can you repeat his question?
Steve asked if I had a favorite commentary on the Abhidhamma, and the other question was, do I have favorite readings from the Pali? I most definitely have a lot of favorite sutras. They're the ones you'll hear me bringing up and mentioning over and over again. They're the ones that speak to me in the strongest way. You know, learning to read the sutras is a knack. I remember the first time I tried reading the Pali Canon, and it's at first all of this repetition and the kind of language they use, and you know, it takes a little while to relate to it. But once you relate to it, once you read those sutras and you get the message, you get some beautiful, powerful things in there. So, I love Ananda's the sutra on Ananda's question about the Sangha being half of the holy life, the noble companions being half of the holy life. There's a lot of sutra. I love the sutra where the Buddha describes how as a bodhisattva he realized that all of his thoughts could be divided into two kinds, the ones that were based in unwholesome greed, lust, desire, and those based in anger and aversion, and those based in cruelty and so forth. He realized that the other kind of thoughts he had were those that were based in generosity, compassion, loving kindness, non-harming, and so forth. And he realized that one of the best things that he could do for himself is just every time he caught himself in one of those negative thought processes, to try to find his way to his counterpart. But he found himself feeling angry and annoyed to get to that place of looking at exactly the same situation, but having thoughts of patience, compassion, and so. That's another beautiful sutra. There's a lot of them. You'll hear me mention. As for the Abhidhamma, it's not a favorite commentary, although something that's rather hard to come by, but it's quite wonderful. Ledi Sayadaw, that's Ledi. If you can get hold of his discussions of the Abhidhamma, I love the way he describes the way our mind builds up. Like first individual moments of consciousness and then groups of moments to the right up to the hierarchy of the kind of conceptual thought that we're ordinarily familiar with. That's a very beautiful description. A lot of good stuff in the Abhidhamma.
Thank
It's now 6:31. So I think it's a good time to bring your question and answer session to a close. You could all make yourselves as comfortable as possible. We'll do a sit for 45 minutes. And I see some new people here. We would like to begin the mandala prayer, and I've got copies here for those who don't already know it.